Chris Lorton here, and welcome to the Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-County. Well, in order to celebrate Veterans Day coming up, I've invited a few veterans in, and today I am happy to have Don Muntz with his wife, Doris. Welcome, both of you. And Don, Vietnam vet. Don, how old are you now?
76.
76. Mm-hmm. And how old were you when you went into the service?
I was drafted when I was 19.
19. So at that time, did you want to go in to the, go into Vietnam, or were you?
Well,
how'd you feel?
I knew a pretty good chance I was going to get drafted, and I had a pretty good job working with Cordite up at Jacksonville at the time as a high lift operator. And then I got my papers and went into service September the 12th of 1967.
Now, at that time, Don, in 67, was it going by numbers according to draft, or was everybody that was eligible getting drafted at what was going on then?
Well, I'm not sure. I think it was going by numbers. I'm not real sure on that. I know they was needing a lot more soldiers during that time, and pretty much everybody of my age that was
eligible
was going to be drafted.
Did a lot of your buddies end up getting drafted too? Your friends at home?
Yes, yeah, they sure, yeah.
So you went in, and where'd you go to boot camp at?
Fort Leavenwood, Missouri, down in Missouri.
What was that like going to boot camp? You got any experience about that? You remember that at all?
Oh, yeah, some. It was a lot of running, a lot of calisthenics, and a lot of training, you know, with your rifle, hand-to-hand combat, grenade throwing, and just about everything that you can think of and that you might use in combat.
So how long was boot camp before you got shipped out?
Yeah, 6 weeks.
Six weeks?
Oh, wait a minute. 6 weeks to boot camp. And then you got to come home, I think, was like a couple weeks. And then you had to go to AIT for another 6 weeks. And
What's AIT?
AIT was from boot camp, they would... they'd have AITs that you'd either be in like infantry or a combat engineer or just a regular engineer, and I don't know what else they cooks or whatever, you know. And I was in combat engineer. It's about the next step up to being in the infantry, but combat engineers would deal with landmines, finding landmines. Building some of the engine, the combat engineers built bridges or temporary bridges and things like that. I was hoping I would be on that, but I ended up being in the mine end of it.
I see. What was it like? Do you remember what it was like when you first landed in Vietnam?
Well, it took us 13 hours to fly over there, and there was probably, I think they said there was 240 guys or other soldiers on the plane, and I didn't know a one of them. And when we flew into, first they dropped us, or we come into Japan, and we laid over there for several hours. And then they flew us into Cameron Bay, which we looked down and there's just sand everywhere in Cameron Bay. And when it landed, they opened up the doors of the plane and you could just feel that heat coming in. And
a lot hotter in Greene County.
Oh man, I mean that heat was just coming in there. And after we got off the plane, we had to line up for our orders, and we stood in line. We had a duffel bag with us, and there were several. We was all in different lines, and to get our orders, and out there in that heat and everything, and I can remember there's a little guy from New York. He was a lot shorter than I, and he just turned around and looked at me. He said, "Just go ahead and shoot me now, because I'm not going to make it." It was terribly hot.
You know? Shoot!
And I'll never forget him saying that. You know, so. And then they gave us orders, and then I had to stay around camp. Or it was not right in that particular area, but it was still in the Cambon area, Bay Area, for about a week or so. And then I had to do what I guess you'd call it on-the-job training with some guys that was coming back or was going to be getting out shortly.
Yeah.
Was teaching us a few things that we were going to need to know. And I was also waiting on, I found out that I was going to be with the 13th Combat Engineer Unit. And I found out that they was getting them loaded up on a merchant marine ship to go up north. And what they done, they loaded the whole battalion on this merchant marine ship, and there was some other artillery, or not artillery, tank units that we loaded on there too. But we was on that merchant marine ship in the South China Sea for 3 days and went to Da Nang. And there was a lot of, during that time it was during Tet, and there's a lot of combat situations going on up in that area there.
What's explain to the listeners, what's Tet?
Okay. Tet is it was where the North Vietnam pretty much poured it on us, you know. That's what we called it over there. They increased their attacks and rocket launch and things like that during that time.
So I guess shortly after that, you got shipped to a designated place. And I understand you were on a minesweeping team?
Well, after I got off we took this convoy on up north. We went through Da Nang very fast and went through Way. Well, we stayed in Da Nang for about a week. We had to support the Marines at a bridge there, and that's kind of where I seen my first combat situations there. And then we went on up to all the way up to almost the DMZ zone. It's south of the DMZ zone. It was called Camp Evans, and the 101st was there at that time, and we worked with them for a while, and that's when I found out I was going to be on a minesweep team.
Okay. How long were you on the minesweeping team before you got injured?
Well, ever since I got up there, pretty much. Been a couple weeks after I got in Vietnam.
Couple weeks? You got injured just a
no,
couple?
No, after I got into Vietnam, it was about a couple weeks after I'd been in Vietnam that I was on the minesweep team. And then we done minesweeps on, we do a couple weeks from the base camp, we'd go up Route 1, and then there's another route or two that we'd do minesweeps. You do like 10 or 12 miles at a time, and every morning we'd be the first ones out of the morning. And we'd meet the infantry units, And they would, we'd go up the road and we'd have to be 10, 12 foot apart. And if it was on the route one or something like that, and we was looking for mines that they'd put out of a night, mainly is what they'd do, so they could open up that road for the different units to go on up north. And the infantry would follow to our right and left of the road. Oh, they'd be out about 50 yards or so, and they would walk in a line out there giving us support so we wouldn't get ambushed we're doing our minesweep.
And did you have like a metal detector or something? Is that what it was?
Well, we had them, but they didn't do any good because there had been so much fighting going on and stuff. There were so many rifle shells and shrapnels on the road, and there was blowed up vehicles on the side of the roads, and they didn't do. The only time they really come in handy is you had to eyeball your mines and stuff, and most of the time you find most of the time the mines after a heavy rain or something like that, because the roads were. A lot of them had dirt in them, and there was some asphalt. I guess the French had put the asphalt down over the years and stuff as it gets blown up. Some places wasn't anything but dirt.
When you found a mine, okay,
yeah.
then what would you do? Hey, if you're just joining us, I have Don Muntz and his wife Doris Muntz is sitting in with us, and we're Don is a Vietnam vet, and just talking about his experience over in Vietnam. So if you found a mine, then you would you be one that would dismantle it, or would somebody else?
No, we didn't on the road. We didn't dismantle them on the roads. What we would do, I was in our squad. I was picked to be the demolition man by the officers when I got over there. I was a demo man, and I'd set a charge, and then I'd blow up the mine. First, you'd have to make sure it wasn't booby-trapped around, because sometimes they do some. They was really good at booby-trapping, and they weren't always all just mines. Sometimes they just booby-traps. They'd on their main route is mainly mines, but out in the what I call the boonies, or out in the field, in the jungle areas, there's a lot of booby traps, and they could be grenades, or they could be grenades next to a artillery shell that they'd found, or there was landmines out there too and stuff, you know. But on the main roads, it was mainly bigger mines that would blow up a vehicle. And
now you're 20 years old, right?
Right.
At this time? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You grew up pretty fast.
I bet.
Yeah.
So what happened the day of your injury?
Well, we was out in the boonies. We was up by the DMZ zone. They was having a lot of trouble. Quezon was having a lot of trouble. You heard of that. It was on television a lot. It was just getting rockets all the time, and then we were too at our base camps and stuff. And so the DMZ zone was a imaginary line between North Vietnam and South Vietnam, and North Vietnam had bunkers built up in there, and tunnels running in underneath the ground and stuff. And it was a big, basically a big enemy camp in different areas. They didn't just have them in one spot, and they may be as long as 2 or 3 miles long, and they'd be dug in there and stuff. The infantry would, well, at first they would carpet bomb them with the B-52s stuff, and we would lay in foxholes on the ground or something of a night, and those B-52s would bomb. Of course, we was away from there then, but we was probably 15 miles away when they was doing the carpet bombing, and you could just feel that ground shaking from them carpet bombing that, and you're wondering how in the world could they survive that, you know. Then when you get to the scene of where they'd done a lot of that, you seen the places where the bombs had hit and the mob craters and stuff. And a lot of times they missed the main bunkers and stuff. And those bunkers was just made out of dirt and bamboo and whatever they could make. And they just seemed like they just could dig. They was like groundhogs. They just dig a hole in no time, you know. They done more digging than anybody I ever seen, you know. I thought we done a lot of digging foxholes all the time, but man, they done some digging. They dug tunnels and they take that dirt out and then they build little bunkers and they weave it in that dirt and stuff in with this bamboo and these banana leaves and stuff like that, you know, and they can
camouflage it.
Really camouflage it, you know. Yeah. But they also, there was a lot of spraying done up in there, and at the time we didn't know anything about that Agent Orange, and basically I think it was Paraquat mixed with probably some 240 or something, but it did help a lot. It killed a lot of the vegetation. It didn't kill it all, but most of it. And then a lot of times in the fighting and stuff, a lot of that got burnt because they dropped a lot of napalm and stuff in there. And it helped a lot, but when, in some ways it helped, but then other ways when it kind of hid the booby traps and the mines worse. And that's what we got into. We had to find them. And it, with all the rifle shells and everything, you just had to learn that just whatever you seen to check it out, you know, and mm-hmm. go from there.
But then how about whenever your mine went off?
Well, we was in the middle of enemy camp, and that they already pushed them out. And we was cleaning up the mines and making sure there wasn't any more, you know, snipers or anybody left. They sometimes they'd be in those bunkers and stuff, or a tunnel or something like that. And then we'd blow them up and try to blow up the tunnels and stuff like that so they wouldn't come back. And that Sunday morning on August 4th, I guess it was my turn. We'd found an enemy arms cache, which was some rifles and quite a few mines and stuff, explosives that they had tucked away. It was kind of next to a little river there, and I'd blown that up earlier there. And we was kind of heading back up to, on up a hill there where some other stuff was. And all of a sudden, I don't even know what happened. It just happened so fast. And I was lucky, though, because I carry a demo pump and I normally keep it filled I carry C4. Several they come in little cute or square deals. It was kind of like a plastic explosive. I'd carry several pounds of that, and I'd carry some TNT canisters, quarter pound canisters, and sticks of dynamite. I'd had that, and my detonated fuse. And I'd say most of the time I carried 10, 12 pounds of explosive all the time. I was kind of like a walking bomb. Nobody wanted to get too close to me. That was kind of the joke we had over there. Nobody, stay away from Munch, you know. So, but
now, why'd you carry all that stuff?
Well, that's what I used to blow up the mines and stuff. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And most of the time, I carried it on my left shoulder, but my shoulder was getting kind of raw out in that heat and stuff. And so I kept switching it over. And of course, you had your weapon in your hand. And I just had switched it over on my right side, And if I'd left that on that left side, because the bulk of the explosive, whatever it was, I'm assuming it was some type of claymore, and it had, from the carpet bombing and stuff, it got covered up with some of the dirt and stuff, and it was probably put in there sideways. The way it hit me, and it come in on my left side, and it instantly blew my my left leg off, and it busted my right leg below the knee. And both bones was busted on it. Hit me up in the left shoulder, hit me in the face and the eyes, and I was blind, and it blew me up because my helper that helped me a lot, he was ahead of me about 5-6 foot at the time. He's supposed to have been a little farther than that, but he got it pretty bad in the back. They sent him to Japan, but he had to go back over there, but they didn't send him back out in the boonies after that. He looked me up after I got out of the hospital and all this and that, and he got out of the service, and I did too. And he was telling me that some of the guys said it blew me up about 15 foot up in the air. So I don't know about that, you know, if it did or didn't, because it was just like a bad stinging feeling, you know, and it just felt like I was seeing stars. And I fell down, and I remember laying there, and I was so thirsty, and I was scared because I thought we got in an ambush. And up there, if you got seriously hurt or something like that, the Viet Cong didn't take prisoners. They just stuck you with a bayonet, or they might have shot you. And if you was seriously, you know, and I don't know where we was at, they would have even took prisoners because they was kind of on the run at that time. Anyway, I was scared at first, couldn't hear nobody, and I was so thirsty, I couldn't hardly stand it. It just, I would give anything for a drop of water, is all I could think of. And here I'm badly hurt, but I'm thinking about something to drink, you know. And I could hear Spiegel, which was my partner, moaning. Apparently it hit a couple of the other infantry guys too. I did hear some gunshots, but I don't know if they was right in exactly where they was at. But then all of a sudden, I heard somebody holler, "Medic," and then next thing I know, they was coming down to us, you know. But it seemed like forever before they got to us. So I don't know exactly what was going on during that time, you know. But
unfortunately, we've ran out of time. So you can hear the second half of Don Muntz's story tomorrow. And believe me, you don't want to miss this.